Say What? Say What radio show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
Welcome to the Say What special presentation of Woo Reality, where we're doing an audiobook before we actually write it. My name is Nancy Hopkins, and the date is April 5th, 2026, better known as Easter Sunday. This is chapter 14, and to be honest, I had a lot of things that interrupted me getting this out Saturday. And by today, I realized, no, that's probably appropriate because it is Easter. And just before I went to bed, a little after midnight, there was an update in the news. In the Iranian war situation, a plane had been shot down, and the pilot, both pilot and the weapons specialist, they ejected. Well, they found the pilot rather rapidly, but the weapons specialist, it was not, they couldn't, well, we were told they couldn't find it. Basically, they knew very shortly after the incident where he was, but he was in a situation in Iran where it was very dangerous because of the location. There was a lot of the Iranian soldiers out there, and it's not very heavily civilian populated, but there was a lot of them because it turned out to be a very, very important position, and they were guarding it. And here this weapons specialist virtually lands on top of what they're guarding. So the Americans had a really, really tough problem there. They had to get the guy out. He was seriously wounded. Get the guy out. It was a ravine in a mountain. And get him out without the Iranian forces getting to him first, because that would have been an unbelievable nightmare for him and for us. So right after midnight, there was a news alert. And they had actually recovered him. Now, that story is fascinating in itself. It's going to be some kind of a movie at some point, I'm sure. But they recovered him. Now, the symbolic messaging behind this is he got shot down on Good Friday. Of course, the story about Jesus is that he died on Good Friday and that he rose from the dead on Easter. Is this an ironic messaging? Because the war, in my opinion, is very much one of good versus evil. Many people would just blow it off. But I told you in the beginning of this book that the most important thing you can do is pay attention to the details. I'm just pointing it out that I believe we were in a war of good versus evil. And in many ways, Jesus represents the war against good and evil. The show I'm going to present you now, it's just really where it is in the book. No pre-planning whatsoever. And the details lead you probably to a conclusion that you may not have anticipated, because I certainly didn't. Okay. Not just in the book, but in my story. So in the last chapter, which was 13, I presented a number of different, let's say, stories or themes. One of them was the Spear of Destiny. Another one was the Mandela Effect. The other one was my trip to Atlanta and my introduction, let's say, to evangelistic Christianity. And I told you that the story about Notre Dame and the fire and the remote viewing. Well, this is a continuation of explaining some of those details. The first one being the Mandela effect. We live in a very complex cosmic reality. It's only limited by your ability to imagine. And the more you can imagine, the more you create. When I give you the episodes of all of these woo-woo stories, I knew from the beginning that I had some kind of a mission. Very early on, I had no idea what that mission was, but I was born into a home, being the oldest of 10 kids, where my dad was always off traveling around working. He was building, they were feed companies where they would process feed for the animals. And mom had 10 kids. We'd moved from Massachusetts to New York, from New York State to Massachusetts, and we had nobody around us as kids to tell us how to think. And we moved into a neighborhood that had a lot of other kids just like us. So mostly us kids took care of each other, and we learned the difference between right and wrong in the sandbox, so to speak. This gave me and my siblings, let's say, an open door to developing our own way of, let's say, being able to go through the realities that we saw based on common sense and based on a feeling of, yeah, we can do anything. Because as kids, we sort of had that. Nobody told us we couldn't. Well, they'd tell us some things, but not that we couldn't dream, not that we couldn't be creative. And that's the way we grew up. So as I went through life, yes, I had all these weird little thingies happening, but I saw life as being very magical. I didn't feel like it was limited. I thought there was evil by the time I got to be 2015, 15 years old with the assassination of President Kennedy. But the reality is that I hardly ever, I don't remember scared. That wasn't something I was, kind of indoctrinated into. And I just was given all of the special gifts to be able to do what I do. And of that detail, I am very much aware. So, the Mandela effect, anything can happen. Now, as far as the Spear of Destiny, it's the concept of talisman. And talisman is this, let's say, situation that exists because people using their imagination imbued in whatever it is, a mineral, a crystal, a There's so many of them, the Spear of Destiny itself. And the very basics of what is real and what isn't. So I told you that I ended up with these evangelist Christians. The energy that they had, the unbelievably pure and good spirit that they exhibited, and also the power when they were praying over me, that was awesome power, I gotta tell you. I don't know what they were saying. And I told you this feeling of a light coming, energy coming into my body. You want to think of it as light, but it's energy coming into my body. And then speaking tongues, and then looking at life a whole lot different, of going into the big arena with the Christians there, and they're all celebrating and singing and playing music and having just a grand old time. And then coming back and getting the Bible. And that whole story, all of that feeling was something I never forgot. But the basic story behind it, the Christianity and their evangelistic beliefs in it, which I only got really a little taste of the evangelistic. I'm not exactly sure what that was about. But I did have the priest did scare me. He did scare me. I just tell you, he was a defrocked Catholic priest. That guy, I don't think I mentioned that, but that's who he was. And he went off and started his own church. But the Cathedral of Notre Dame is also a talisman. But it's based on a really old and, well, held sacred by, the dark secrets, the things they don't tell you. And that's the ley lines, that energy fields that are all around Earth. Somebody way back when figured all this out. Maybe they were ETs. Maybe they got told by ETs. I don't know. Maybe it was just their ability to feel the energy like I do. But way back when, somebody realized that certain places were more energetic than other places. And so they would build sacred sites. And there's all different versions of those, but sacred sites. Now, yes, you had the energy people, the people that felt this, that started the construction and stuff. But it maintained, some of these things have been, probably 1,000 or more years of people believing it was a sacred site. The people themselves may have felt the energy. But more likely, it was their belief system that said, no, this is a place of, sacred space. You'll get closer to God in it. And when they would go there, they would feel closer to God because everybody thought they were going to. It's the intention of the people. It goes back to the concept of timelines. Why do we have all these different versions of timelines? Well, it's because timelines are the consensus of belief of what is reality. And the most, I think, remarkable and exciting thing that happens is that it's the people's consensus. They all think that reality is the same thing, that absolutely manipulates the energies around them to fulfill that image that they have. So even if something isn't sacred, if you get enough people convinced it is, it could be sacred. It's a matter of human belief. And that concept comes from when we were cleaning the gold mine spill. And what I saw is that the system to fix it wouldn't even come on until there were enough people who woke up in the morning, heard this story and said, "Oh no, we're not going to let that happen." And that was the energy that turned it on and that allowed it all to clear. It's the same situation. Okay. Now, the Notre Dame Cathedral was on a ley line, and now you can go and you can find, all sorts of information regarding how many different churches, basically, or like castles or places of government. They're all on ley lines, crossing points. Okay. You can find out exactly where they are, but Notre Dame was one of those things. So the consensus belief is also can be thought of as the collective consciousness. And when enough people believe something, every thought we have is in the collective consciousness. And it's the amount of energy that goes towards confirming a thought, where you create the consensus concept. The collective consciousness is everything anybody's ever thought or did or said. So when I was going through all of this, I became aware that, I did it for quite a long time, and I was with the first two radio stations I was with. We had over 500 people, maybe up to 800 people listening to the live show. But when I went to Cosmic Reality, we didn't have anywhere near that audience. But I was glad because I began to realize that I didn't have to have numbers. I had to have quality people. Because the more somebody knows who they are, more pure is their thought. If they're just reiterating, what they heard or da da da, but those people that really do, have creative consciousness. And it was those people I began to really focus on when I would do a show. After a bit, I realized that it was more than just talking to people. It was the fact that we did the shows that put this thought into the collective consciousness, and that we were going out and we were collecting other people to think the same way, because as they hear it, they're going like, "Oh yeah, that sounds reasonable," or "Oh, I don't agree with that." But we'd have a conversation about the subject that would then influence the collective, I mean the consensus reality. So my goal was, let's just put out this information. Let people handle it. It's the fact that people don't get information, they don't know, that makes them ignorant, and therefore not thinking in the concept of common sense and living following the Ten Commandments and the Golden Rule, do unto others as you would do unto yourself. And that became my goal. Get more people into that framework so that they can listen to weird stuff. And let's see what happens. Because we can change reality if we change the collective consensus of it. And to do that, you have to put it into the entire creative realm of human thought. So that's what I've been doing for quite a long time. I am kind of losing the thread of what I'm trying to tell you, because I really am sort of like putting it together as we go along. So I'm sorry if this sounds a little disjointed, but I don't think it really is. Okay, so the story that I want to get across and focus on, and not keep getting all these different ways I could take this, is the magical thing called Shungite. Now, people got to the point where they're calling me the Shungite lady, and it was like, But there's an interesting story behind that one, because right now Shungite is the most researched element thing in science. And everything I said, everything Walt said, everything John JP said, all of it's been put through the scientific, certified scientific realm and proven true. So for that, I know that I've accomplished my job. We ended up with Derek Condon, who was trying to save the bees. He was a beekeeper. And right now, Shungite beehives are all over the world. I haven't, at least in the last few years, of course, there's a lot of other things being talked about, heard about the loss of bees. And it just very much is possible or probable that that's because we've touched enough people that those people have gone out and they're also talking about Shungite, and so it goes and so it goes. There's been obviously a change in the consensus reality. In the beginning, Shungite was like a magical rock. Yeah, go screw yourself. I mean, people were just like, they wouldn't even listen. And now we have a Google Map grid where people can go and they can say, yes, I put Shungite on this location on the map. And if you look at it, it's just full of dots. It's all over the world, every continent, just full of them. So the impact of Shungite on the world has been enormous, because that grid system is actually affecting everything around it. It's the concept of venerology. And Shungite just happens to be incredibly energetic. I'm not going to get into the science, don't worry. I'm not going to bore you with all that. No, I just want to point the thing out that my mission was to get Shungite to the masses, and I believe I did it with the help of a lot of people. A lot of people. So how did I get into Shungite? And again, you have to pay attention to the details. I went to the army. I became an electronic warfare officer. I'm not exactly sure why, but that's what happened. And so I learned a tremendous amount about the just telecommunications that as it existed in the early 70s, mid 70s. And then I met an ET who showed me that this telecommunication system would eventually control the world. And so when I got out of the army, I was highly motivated to stop this. And I started a company. I wasn't alone. There were other people that were very much afraid of the telecommunication systems. And I started up a company, and the company was set up to go into people's houses and see where the electricity was maybe causing problems. It was in its infancy in the 80s. So the idea is that you go in with measurements of electricity and then you fix it. But you can't fix it. All you can do is say, okay, the power is coming into the house at this in this particular location. Do not put your bed there. Don't put your child's bed there. use this space limitedly because it is poisonous. Sometimes it was a simple lamp, and all they had to do was rewire it. But anyway, it didn't work. Nobody believed me. I mean, it was like no, even the people, like I had this one guy, and he believed me. And he brought me in and he was willing to pay me. But his wife thought I was nuts and he was nuts. And he paid me, but boy, she was nasty. So I wasn't going to get a referral off of that, I didn't think. But anyway, and everything, I mean, I wrote a book about with cosmic reality. I was writing the book in the 80s. And there were so many things I was attempting to do, but none of it was working. And this was pre-internet again. So I couldn't do anything. And then I realized also that I would tell people about the dangers, and there was nothing I could do to really mitigate those dangers. And so all I was doing was creating fear. So I said, no, we're not going to do this now. Well, then a little bit down the pike there, my brother Phil came to visit me in Miami, and he worked for the Navy. So he had no he always thought I was crazy, always thought I was crazy. And we were on the beach, and he was in the Navy as a civilian, but I didn't know what his job was. He would never talk about it much. There was one conversation where I thought, he doesn't know who I am. And so I let him know that I couldn't talk about what I knew because I had, being, I could look at stuff he couldn't even see because I was working with NSA and stuff. So I said to him, what do you actually do? Because he was down in Miami doing a job for the Navy. And he says, I work on radars. And my blood went cold. One of the very first things that I learned from the military and from the electro known electricity and stuff was that, and this was highly secret, nobody knew about this, that there was a let's say a situation where they were finding a lot of people who were with the Navy in particular that were working around radars that were coming down with cancers, but the number one cancer was the brain cancer. And this brain cancer was not a prevalent type of cancer. You hardly ever saw it. But they were getting these brain cancers. And I sat there on the beach and said to myself, do I say anything to him or not? He's going to think I'm crazy. He's not going to listen to me. It's going to strain our relationship. And I turned around to him. I said, you're going to die. And he's like, what? What are you talking about? And I said, Phil, I know you don't think much of me, but let me tell you. And I told him basically just what I told you. Well, it did put a strain on our relationship, but he went home and I don't think I saw him, but at family get-togethers after that. And one day I have a dream. And I at that time I didn't remember dreams. I just let me go to sleep and get fixed. And Phil is there and he's extremely upset. And it was just it's sort of like a warning. I took it for a warning because when I woke up, I remember very clearly what it was. I even though I had had the dream, I didn't wake up and start panicking and calling Phil. I just sort of like, whoa, that was weird. And Very shortly after that, I got the call that he had been diagnosed with the cancer in the brain that was killing people because they worked around radars. And I remember the story was is that this effing doctor took these tests and saw that what it was, and because this thing had virtually, it was a death sentence. This was the kind of doctor that you really want to get as far away, in my opinion, as you can. He looked at my brother and he said, "You're a dead man. Get your final papers in order." That's what he said to him. Well, my mom flew down there with my sister, who was an RN, and they decided that he had to get out of Hawaii and get back to the Boston hospitals that were the best. I think they were probably close at that time, the best in the world. So they took him home, and I was able to go up there and spend some time with him. We actually he had a Japanese wife, and she was also there. But by that time, all of his kids were basically out of the house, and the upstairs where the kids used to live, they used to hospice, basically hospice Bill. And what I found very, well, there's a lot of things I found tragic about the story, but what was really upsetting was that people thought he was damaged because he could think perfectly well, but he couldn't get it out. And my father just, oh my God, if I ever disliked the man, it was then. When he Phil would walk in the room, he'd walk out for a lot of reasons. I'm not going to get into the psychology of my father, but that really hurt me. And I'm sure it hurt Phil because I knew that telepathically I could still see that Phil was absolutely all right in his head. But he couldn't articulate anything. So I spent a lot of time with him, and we watched the Olympics. It was the Summer Olympics. I don't even know what year. And I had such a good time with him because he would cheer when he's supposed to cheer, and he was just so engaged in it. And I could say things to him, and I knew in his mind, yeah, that's true. It was just an incredible gift. I don't know if he thinks it was, but it was an incredible gift to me to be able to do that. So, sure enough, Phil died. Well, that caused me to take up again the concept of the telecommunications. But again, I had absolutely no way of doing anything about it. But it was always like in the back of my mind. So I was doing some research on electromagnetic pulse, because in geopolitical reality, they were afraid that just an electromagnetic pulse from a nuclear bomb could take out your entire electromagnetic system. So I went on a search to find something out there regarding an electromagnetic pulse that the Russians knew, because remember, I was a Russian expert in the army, and I never lo lost my love for looking at what Russia was doing, particularly militarily. So I'm diving into Russian documents that were I don't read Russian, not at all, not no foreign language. So you'd get a Russian text that was translated by the Germans or translated by the British, I mean the British, yeah, the French or somebody, and you might go through three translations before you see it in English. So it was really kind of iffy, to the degree that this information was was accurate, but in this particular case, it was from Russian to English. And they started talking about this stuff called shungite that they were using to shield their electromagnetic weapon guidance systems, basically, and against electromagnetic pulse. But just before I found those papers, my computer started ding, 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 ding. And it was a Facebook group that I was engaged in. And for some reason, all these people all of a sudden were very concerned about electromagnetic poisoning. And they're talking one another, and nobody knows very much. And so I go and I look at what's happening, and I'm like, well, that's interesting. And I said, please give me something that I can give them. I could scare the crap out of them, but give me something to give them. And then I go back, that's right after that, I went back to my research and I found this thing on shungite. So I go back there and I said, blah, 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 blah. Shungite can protect against electromagnetic pulses. It would be probably effective against any kind of electromagnetic signal. Okay. So the next day, ding, 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 starts up again. And I go over there and they're all saying, we can't find it. We don't know where it is. Where do we find information on it? And I went, oh my God, okay. So I start researching shungite. And the more I researched it, the more I was like, wow, this is fascinating. And that's how I got into shungite. A series of ding, 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 dings on my Facebook. And the fact that I was already on the quest to find a protection against electromagnetic pulse. To me, that looking at his details and symbols is that okay. So, and the more I learned, and then I started again. I was on radio. I was on the two biggest show stations in the world. Many many shows I had, and JP was the producer, and I started telling JP about it and our audience. And pretty soon JP got into it. And then the people started getting into it. And they're all like, where do we get it? Where do we get it? And I said to myself, well, you can get it, but do I tell them you can get it here, or do I tell them get it from me? And so I had started to really consider buying shungites, starting up a source for shungite. But I'm with JP and we're talking about shungite, and I was getting all of this information into my head about how it protects, the science behind it. But I didn't know what to do with that. So I said, please bring me somebody that can take the stuff in my head and put it into reality. And one day on the Facebook page, the Wolf Spirit Facebook page, this guy comes and posts and he says, well, this is based on shungite that I heard about in your podcast. And so I'm just showing it to you. Well, that was Walt Silva. And I said to him, JP, who's this guy? Do you know him? Yeah. He's on another show. So we get introduced, and he's exactly what I asked for. Give me somebody that can take the thoughts in my head and make them real. And as soon as I got with Walt, real magic began to happen. That's when we were able to figure out you can put it in your water, figured out how it protected against electricity. Eventually, how we could really affect the cell phones and the Wi-Fis, and that was with the addition of silver shungite. And I could, I basically wrote a book called Shungite Reality on all of the things that happened at that point in time. So then we meet Derek, and we that's okay. 20 minutes after I put the Shungite store online, I had the first sale. And that was 2014. Every year after that, those sales doubled. I ended up having a show, Shungite Reality, because there was so much information coming in. There were so many people willing to tell their stories about it that it just kept going and going and going. You got still the two biggest, stations in the world, and JP got in it with me, and then we brought Walt in. We'd have shows with me and Walt and Jay. And we would talk about concept things, and then Walt basically, and JP got into building things too. They would build something. My point being here that every time I asked her something, I got it. Now, yes, I was led to ask about it, but that's just part of the overall story. So the store was actually getting so big, I couldn't handle it myself. And I had a partner who was going out and selling it, but I was the one that was actually running the online store and also, supplying her with Shanghai. And I kept talking to Derek, and I realized that Derek was somebody very special. And I said to him one day, I said, Derek, and we'd been talking. He worked as a what do they call it? A prison guard, and he had a job where he got in a truck every night and drove around the prison just patrolling. So he had a lot of time, and he did a lot of listening to podcasts, including mine and Walt's. And one day we got to talking about Shungite protecting the bees. And he had just had the year before, 16, he had started up his first beehives, but they basically died. So we were just meant to talk. And like I say, the store was getting out of hand. So I said to him one night, I said, what would it cost me to hire you away from the prison system? Oh no, I can't do that, and blah 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 blah, benefits and all this stuff. And I said, that's fair and that's true. But if I'm right, does any of that matter? And I wasn't about to hire him. I couldn't afford him. I didn't know what he was gonna say, but I knew I probably couldn't afford him, but at least I had some goal. What would it take me to get him involved in the store? And the next day, he had quit his job. And now he's going to go into business with me. And we do. We set up a new store in Washington State where he lives. And basically, he took over doing the store stuff, which was. Again, the store in the first year that he owned the just the internet store, it was a $1 million company. So, oh, this is good. This is, working out and everything. And basically, he ended up opening up a concrete brick store called Mystical Wares. So he's got Mystical Wares, which became the biggest metaphysical shop. It's not even a shop. It was like the size of a grocery store, in Mount Vernon, Washington. And because he took his focus off of the Shungite and put it into the Mystical Wares, they had the biggest collection of Shungite. But because of that, in my opinion, the store began to falter. And in the end, it didn't make much money at all. But I'm out there and I'm still promoting Shungite because, again, he's got a very successful, concrete brick store. And I'm out there and I'm doing Shungite reality shows, and he's with me on them by that time. And everything is going hunky dory. But the things in the world were not so hunky dory. This change was made in 2019. And the situation with the electromagnetic problem was also part of why I was so fervent in getting the message of Shungite out, because it would protect people from electromagnetic energy. Well, this guy, he heard the broadcast and everything, and we became, friends. Michael Henry Dunn. And he had been on, worked with Carrie Cassidy from Camelot. And he wanted me to go on Carrie's show. So I said, yeah, okay. I didn't even, by that time they were doing like podcasts and videos and stuff. And I was still back in the dinosaur age with the radio. I knew they were there, but I hadn't participated. So he gets me on the Camelot. And that show went very, very well. Carrie was very popular. Within the first day, there were 20 some thousand people who would listen to the show. Well, I had another friend who, Mona Radler, who worked for one of the old stations I had worked for. And she, somehow or another, interviewed Mark Steele from Britain. And Mark Steele was a basically a weapons technician. He had all sorts of patents on things that were essentially electromagnetic weapons and how to protect yourself. Now, this would have been, well, again, it was about 2019. So I hear the show that Mark does with her. And she said, here's his contact information. You need him on your shows. So I get a hold of Mark. And by that time, I don't think we had actually started up the radio 5G. Because it was sort of like that came just right after the Camelot thing. And Michael and Carrie said, you need to set up a podcast about this subject. And I was like, oh, no. I've tried to explain this to people. It's very difficult. No. I was really busy. But then, then I got prodded to do it. So we put out Radio 5G. So I was actually doing Radio 5G when Mona tells me about Mark, and so I bring Mark over to it. And this was the first time in my life that I ever talked to somebody who actually knew more about the subject than I did. And it was like, oh, wow, great. And he was British, terribly difficult to listen to because he had a huge accent. But that his story in of itself is pretty remarkable. So he's living in Great Britain And the town next to him was one of three towns that were designated to put 5G in the neighborhood. And he's driving through this area that they're putting up this new 5G system. And he looks at it and he goes, "Oh my God, what are they doing? That's a weapon system." He knew the technology so well that he could see that the 5G that they had sold it as being, the telecommunications thing to go to, was really based on a weapon system. So Mark starts looking into this, gets totally freaked out, goes to the government, the town government, and said, "Do you know what you're doing? Please listen to me." He ended up on charges of trying to incite a riot or treason. I can't get it straight in my mind, and brought before a judge. And when he went in there, he had all these certificates and, stuff that says this guy is the real deal. And the judge apparently was a common sense sort of person. And they said to the town, "You got to listen to this guy. He's an expert in this subject. So if he's telling you this, it's true." And orders the town to study up on what Mark was saying. But they didn't even contact Mark. So somehow or another, well, being led, Mark ended up on Mona's show and then ended up on my show. And then we introduced Carrie Cassidy. And so Carrie Cassidy gets involved in it with Mark. That at that time of 19, when they said to me, "Let's do this," I said, "Please, nobody knows anything about it." There were no, at least I didn't know about them, any 5G, anti-5G shows out there at all. There was actually not very much information. And this is when the Mandela effects begins to happen. Because in 2019, I didn't think we'd have a chance to make a difference. Within about 9 months, there were dozens, maybe hundreds, of sites, podcasters and different sites that knew quite a bit about 5G. I don't believe, and they had history. They'd been up for 5, 10 years, I mean, but that didn't make any sense to me because I was so aware of the subject matter that I couldn't imagine I wouldn't have seen it if it was out there like it. So we began to, there was a film done on it by a very well-known video creator. There were different people coming together and comparing notes, and the subject got bigger and bigger and bigger. Mark was arrested again, brought before another judge, and wins the case. They told me he was an expert and blah blah blah. And when I started out with him, I said to him, "I believe you because I know the information, but I have to, without a hesitation, be able to talk to my audience." I said, "What proof do you have that what you're telling me is true?" And he said, "I'm not supposed to do this by lawyer's advice, but I will send you copies of my patents." I said, "Send them to me and I'll immediately destroy them." So he sent me his patents. There was like over six. They were real. And so I never, ever after that doubted Mark. Not at all. So we begin to make a headway into the to the concept of Wi-Fi. People are starting to understand it. There's a lot of noise out there on the internet about it. And one day, I get a message from Michael on my cell phone. And it says, it gives me a link to, I'm trying to say, Russia was, yeah, Russian Today, I think they called it. It was a basically a news outlet for the Russians. And, but it was on my cell phone and I had guests, and so I sort of didn't really look at it. But after the guests left and I had a nap, I got up and looked at the phone and said, well, what's all this about? So I went on the computer and I opened up the, well, actually, the initial look at it was on the phone, but then it was like, what? And then I went and opened up the computer. And what happened was that it was a news posting about what they were calling a comet that had flown over Karelia, Russia, which is where the Shungite field is, and seemingly exploded or crashed, right, in the same Karelia. So they have a video of it. It was some security camera, I'm assuming, that was kind of watching a church, but it was way off. You could see the church, but most of the frame is taken up by the sky. And you can see this blue ball come in. And it's just a, like a ball. And then suddenly it starts to expand, like it might have entered the atmosphere and was, getting hotter and therefore expanding. And then downrange, not very far, it explodes. So my question to myself was, where's the city? And which way was it pointing? Okay. Because once I had the location of the city, I knew, I didn't know, I mean, I had the position of the city and I knew where the Carillion field was. So I did the measurements and everything and I said, if this is looking down south, then that thing exploded probably very close to the Shungite field, because Shunga, the city, the little town that Shungite is named for, was about 200 miles away from that city. So now I contact my Russian connections, and they have connections to Karelia, and I said, find out if this thing that they know about this and that it actually exploded near them or whatever. Find out. Well, it took a couple of days before they came back and they said, yes, it exploded right over the Shungite village of Shungite, actually the Shungite field. Well, that's interesting because in my interpretation of where Shungite came from, in my interpretation, it was from some kind of a meteorite that crashed into the planet, a long time ago when the Earth was still molten. And it hit the mold semi-solid ground and then shattered. So there's little areas of it, through the, but there's the big one. And, I was absolutely fascinated by this entire story. So they come back and they say, yes, this happened over the field. Okay, so it happened over the Shungite field. Very interesting. You have two comets that hit one on top of the other after millions of years, billions of years. That's very interesting. Think about that for a minute. Is that even Feasible in the scheme of reality? I guess so. It's happened. So, I get the information confirming what I know or what I felt was true. Because, or what I knew was true, actually. Because before we got the messaging back from Russia, I did a remote view. I went back to that church. And essentially went back to the point that the comet was going over the area and being captured by the video, which is not, I don't know, 2, 3 minutes. I don't even think it's 3 minutes, maybe 2 minutes long. And I'm there in the remote view, and I said, okay, show me where it exploded. I didn't think it hit the ground. I thought it was an explosion. Where did it explode? Well, the next thing I know, I'm in the Shungite field, and I know the Shungite very well because I used to go there a lot in remote viewing just to feel its energy and interact with it. I mean, it's just a very, very sacred place to me. And so, boom, I'm there, and I went, oh. And all of a sudden, there's like, I don't know if I heard anything, but the sky lit up above me, and I looked up, and there's all of this. Well, I think it's plasma, but it was like this dripping liquid blue that was falling all around me like rain. And I look down, and the Shungite, it's the Shungite, and then almost immediately sort of got absorbed into the Shungite. But I just had this explosion over my head. So while I'm looking at this, I'm going like, no, get me away from underneath it. Let's do a replay. So we replay it, only this time, instead of me saying, show me what happened, put me right there. Yeah, right. Good idea. I said, off in the distance a little bit so I can see what's happening. Got experience what's happening. And boom, I'm seeing the blue light like I'm on the ground, and I'm seeing the blue light coming in. And I honestly did not know. Well, I did. I'd had another experience, one of the first times I ever did a remote. I had the experience of stopping time and going back and seeing something that happened in, in the past, because time doesn't exist. And so I know that, well, I don't know if I know it or whatever, but I did it. I said, okay, stop frame. And I began to have the programming go backwards. Okay. Because I wanted to know, where did it come from? And I really, if I was quizzed on it at that moment, would have said, I think it's an ET ship. And that they shot it into the Shungite to put this excess energy in it, or I don't know what. But I felt like it was good energy. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm replaying it. And I honestly, honestly thought I was going to see an ET ship. But I didn't. If I had to put an explanation to it, which I did when I was telling people this, because I went on the radio immediately. I was looking into the face of God. I don't even know how to explain it. I mean, I wouldn't want to try to draw it or anything like that, but that was the feeling I had as it happened. And when you look in the face of God, you kind of drop right out of a remote view, which happened. And I'm sitting there going like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. What's this all about? Well, we started getting reports. I went on the radio. I told them about this, and we started getting reports of people having weird blue glow associated with their Shungite. Somebody, their dog's dishes all of a sudden turned blue and were radiating this wonderful, color. And there were other people who saw it. Like one man asked, "What? Why is your pendant glowing blue?" And they didn't know, but they were by a pool, and they thought maybe it's some weird reflection. But when he got up and walked away, she said, "Do you have shungite in your pocket?" Because his pocket was glowing blue, and he did. I didn't see anything in the shungite I've got, but people did have, they were coming in with different weird reports about, "Yeah, I saw that blue, in the shungite." So Walt went and remeasured the energy output of the shungite. And the show we were doing it on had a guy that was a musician and a sound man, knew sound really well. And so I told Walt, do another measurement. And he uses a pendulum and a chart. And so he starts doing that, and I sort of carry on the show. But it's taken him a long time. And finally he comes back, and he says, "Yeah, it's changed. This is the number." And he spouts out this number. It means nothing to me. But the musician went, "Walt said, that's not even possible." And Walt said, "I know that. That's why it took me so long. I went back through the whole thing and got the same results." So now we know that after the blue plasma ball, in my mind, hit the shungite in the mother field, shungite had an incredible uptick in energy. So we do a few shows. It took a few shows, three shows, I think, to be able to explain even the basics of what I covered now. We were doing it pretty detailed way. And all of a sudden I'm like, what did I say? I saw a blue celestial body. And what was it the Hopi prophecy said, that everybody, every time there's been a blue light in the heavens, everybody thinks, is this the, blue star Kachina? And I'm going like, is this, was that the blue star Kachina? Because the prophecy said that, and this was the 21st of 2020. Yeah, February 21st of 20. But the blue star Kachina, there was a Hopi prophecy. It had 10 prophecies in it. You could see how all of the prophecies up until 10 it come true. But the last one was that in the celestial heavens, you would see a blue star Kachina that would mark the end of the old world and the beginning of the new world. And I'm telling you, every time there was a blue star up in, space, everybody, "Oh, this is the Kachina." And it did make me kind of like, "Oh, that was kind of lame of you," that I didn't think about it until like days later. "Oh, is this the blue star Kachina?" Now, remember I said the date, it was in February of 2020. 11 days later, the world shut down because of COVID. We've never gone back. We've never seen that old world. It's gone. The world we're in is a totally new world. And it seems like it's a very difficult world. I mean, we all went through it. We know the history. I think we are in a new world. And I think that new world will be so good, unbelievably good, because I think it's blessed by God. So I'm going to leave the show here. I have no idea how long it's taken. Because in the following chapter, or maybe more, I'm going to tell you woo-woo events that I had that regarded spiritual, seeing angels. So I'm going to go through those woo-woo events with you that, in some of the stories I've told you, you kind of feel that in certain ways, but these were, you couldn't deny what was happening. You don't look at an archangel and think, oh my gosh, this is just a run-of-the-mill story. No. So I've had those experiences. And I want to share them with you. But I also wanted to share the story about Shungite. Because even though most of those stories came before Shungite, I have honestly not had, except for like a few instances, there's been no big story to tell you since 2020, February 2020, because everything that I was learning after that had to do with geopolitics, but not just geopolitics, cosmic geopolitics. And so the stories I'll be telling you are ones that happened before I saw the face of God. And that's what allowed me to have had enough educational knowledge, brainwashing, if you want, to accept that, wow, that could be the face of God. So I appreciate you all listening to this. I hope you're having a blessed Sunday, and I'll see you next time.
Say what? Say what radio show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.